You are listening to the Hiking Radio Network, where we talk the walk with shows by hikers about hikers for everybody.
Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail, the ultimate midlife crisis. Join Steve and his guests every week as he staggers from Georgia to Maine.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. This is Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail, the ultimate midlife crisis. I am Mighty Blue, or Steve Adams. This week, we've got a husband and wife who set out to do the trail a little differently. Mike Hansen had wanted to do the AT for a while, and because the two of them had missed quite a bit of each other's lives as Mike was in the military, his wife Marla Hansen didn't want to miss out on his adventure and have another bout of separation. So they worked it out. Quite how they worked it out, we're going to find out in a moment. They've got a great little story and I'm sure you're going to love it. Two more of our class of 2023 start this week with Betty McEnany, who brought her husband Bruce along with her to our Woods Hole weekend last October. Betty is starting this coming Saturday, the 18th, at Springer. She's kind of an indomitable spirit, and we're going to hear from Betty in a moment. Also starting this week, in fact today, if you're listening on Thursday morning as this comes out, is Erin Conrad and her mum. We'll hear from both Betty and Erin after we listen to Mike and Marla. Then Dr. Lynn, in that wonderfully clinical way that doctors have, will tell us all about the joys of intestinal problems on the trail. Lovely. After Lynn, we'll hear the beginning of the 15th chapter of George Stephanos' Then the Hell Came, when George has a zero day that doesn't go quite to plan. So let's get on with it and hear how Mike and Marla had a big adventure last year. Here they are. Our guests today are a husband and wife team. This is Mike and Marla Hansen. Hey, guys, how are you?
Hi.
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm about to learn about your story. I mean, I've obviously talked to you about it. I understand a bit about it. And the two of you banded together last year now, 2022, to achieve the ambition of just one of you. who did what?
So I through hiked the Appalachian Trail, been dreaming about that for 12 years now, and it became a joint effort a few years ago when Marla, my wife, decided to follow along in the RV and support me on my hike.
So what was that like for you then, Marla? Did you think he was crazy to start with, or do you just support things he does?
I thought it was a great idea. Generally support the things he does because usually I'm the one with crazy ideas. It was my idea to follow him along and get in the RV and live in the RV. So it was a great adventure and I didn't want to miss out on the great adventure. So.
Quite right. So did you live the hike vicariously? I know you went on, you saw some of the highlights and so on, but was it a vicarious experience for you or was it seeing Mike achieve his goal that really did it for you?
I think it was my own adventure. I wouldn't say it was vicarious because I felt like I didn't want his adventure. I don't really like to camp in the woods. I like to hike, but I want to come home and sleep in my own bed. But I felt like it was my own tandem adventure of just going up the East Coast and seeing all kinds of beautiful things, getting to join him and be there for his highlights, but I felt like we each had our own adventure that was kind of the same and kind of different.
And what was the longest time you actually stayed apart?
Well, I believe it was a 100-mile wilderness, wasn't it?
You abandoned him in the 100-mile wilderness. You know, there are several places in there. I mean, I slack packed the first 4 days of the 100-mile wilderness when I did it first time. So it's definitely doable, you know.
Yes.
Well, and we'll probably get to that, but he received trail magic of cheeseburgers in the 100-mile wilderness. So
there is nothing wrong with that at all. Now, unlike many of our other, what I call it, midlife crisis hikers, because you're about 50, Mike. Is that right?
I'm right at 50, yes. You're 50. 50 right at the halfway point on the trail.
Well, you've already mentioned that you had the AT on your radar since about 20, 2010, about 12 years ago. Tell us what happened, because most people, well, a lot of people have been on the show, particularly recently, discovered the AT during Boy Scouts. But for you, this was quite a later thing. So how did it first get on your radar?
You know, I don't remember exactly how it got on my radar. I remember there were, you know, I overheard a conversation about somebody thinking about going and doing a section hike of the AT, 100 miles or so. I thought that'd be a cool idea. Now, I didn't know them well enough to invite myself, basically, but I don't know. That was kind of the seed, I guess.
You don't look as shy, man. I'm sure you could have invited yourself quite easily.
I'm a hardcore introvert, so no, I don't really inject myself in the conversations. In fact, I work pretty hard to get out of them most of the time. But yeah, over the next 2 years, it became more of an idea. It developed from an idea to, yeah, I really want to do this, to near obsession stage, especially in the 2012-2013 timeframe, when the first friend of mine, because I, you know, mentioned it to several friends, and they all thought, oh, good luck, why, you're crazy, those type of standard responses, right?
Cool. But
then there was one, our friend in Germany, his name is Greg, and suddenly he said, yeah, I'd love to do that. And well, then it became full-on obsession, because I had somebody who wanted to do it with me, and he did. He started the trail with me. So
you thought it was a good idea, Marla. So you observed in Mike. Did you see what he was seeing? Because, you know, I'm not sure what the idea of a long hike stirs within a man or a woman, for that matter. So what did that idea stir within you, Mike? Was it the thing that takes you back to a kid as a child, or? Because it is a long adventure and so on. So what did it actually stir within you?
Definitely some of the kids stuff. I remember in high school, I would, in the summer, I would pack a big cooler and take a tent and go into my grandparents' timber and stay there for a week. And I did that several times through high school. And to my parents' credit, they never came and bothered me. I would literally just be out there by myself.
You know, that's called child neglect these days, don't you?
Yes.
Good Lord.
Those are still my fondest memories.
Yeah, I'm sure. So that's interesting. An introvert on the trail. I know a lot of people actually are out there. Did you find fellow introverts out there?
Yes, for sure. And strangely enough, some of the tramleys were, there was one in particular that I met on and off through Virginia. Five of them, only one of them was an extrovert and actually even talked to me. The other four just didn't give me the time of the day. And when I spent a few nights in shelters with them. Safari was the one that talked to me. I'm still friends with him on Instagram, and we chat and stuff. And sure. So, yeah.
It's funny. It does bring all sorts out onto the trail, doesn't it? And and you said that Marla became involved as part of this a few years ago when you started researching and so on. And Marla, when we spoke before, you said that the army had caused you to have enough time apart already. So what was that like? So you're a military man, obviously, Mike. So what was it like being an army wife where your husband deployed a lot?
Right. So, the army just tended to take us in different directions a lot. You know, Mike missed our first anniversary, missed our 10th anniversary. He was actually in Iraq, our 10th anniversary. And then he also just went to different places, not necessarily dangerous, but just work travel, where he would go to countries and I'd be like, that sounds really cool. I wish I could visit that country. And, you know, we just had a lot of times where we were separated doing our own thing. And we just decided when he retired, we didn't want to do that. I didn't want to start his retirement with another 6 month separation. You know, I had enough of those.
So you inserted yourself into his plans. Were you happy with that? Because that adventure, it's definitely a different adventure that you've had to what others have had. Were you happy with that originally? Obviously you're happy that you did it now, obviously, but what did you think about that originally, Mike?
Oh, I was thrilled. I was totally thrilled. I didn't want to spend that much time apart either. That was my biggest concern and fear going into the trail was, okay, now I'll be pretty much alone on, I mean, alone on the trail as far as she goes. I mean, sure. That was a good appeal to having Greg along, and why I wanted to have a friend come along, because I didn't want the, you know, the pure loneliness. But, you know, starting out, I was very concerned about her having a good time on the trail and having a positive experience, because I want to continue hiking, right? And so if she enjoys
it. You do want a lot of earache from your wife is what you're saying,
right,
isn't it?
Right. If she enjoys it, that means I get to keep hiking these long hikes, because I don't want to do them alone. So
and that works out.
Yeah, very much so. And it was a halfway point when, I don't remember what I said, but Marla's response was, "I'm having just as much fun as you are." And I was like, "Oh, yay."
So what is that fun then, Marla? What is it? I still don't quite get it myself. You know, you're effectively, you're his Uber driver or from time to time. What did you actually get out of the hike?
I think it was just this great adventure. And in the way that the hiker leaves some of those responsibilities behind, you know, you're just in the woods and your scope of what you have to think about is smaller. It was a little bit like that for me too, in that we were dedicated to this plan. And so we weren't having to think about where are we going to go or what family member are we going to visit or any of those things. It was just, we're going to work this plan of doing the RV, of completing the trail. I'm going to get to see all these amazing things. I'm going to get to spend this great time hiking with Mike, this great time alone, this great time in campgrounds. It was just an adventure.
It was. Well, I tell you what, it really struck me when we were talking the other day, Marley, you said you would often park the RV up and hike towards Mike as he was coming out. So you were, that must have been thrilling for you, Mike. You know, you're looking, you know, you're near the end of your day and your wife's hiking towards you. That must have been pretty darn cool. Tell us about that.
Yes. And you know, even though I, you know, knew it was, she was going to meet us, a lot of times it was a surprise. You know, I'm in my own little world, talking to Greg or, whoever I happen to be hiking with, or most of the time alone. And then there she is. And I was like, oh, I must be near the end of my day.
That is
and
cool.
She's always so happy and enjoying, you know, her hike. And the one of the most memorable was I was ending my day at the Knock, and that was my worst day on trail. And
why?
Well, it started at 12 degrees. That was my coldest night on trail.
That's the
my
water.
Yeah,
that's
the water froze. Had to get to water. It was 3.4 miles before I found a source at a shelter, had to break the ice to get to the water. This cold, miserable, nasty day. It was the longest day up to that point. I think it was like 16 miles, which, I mean, that's not a tremendous day, but up to that point, that was the longest day.
By
the end of the day, though, it was nice and warm. And, you know, the trail grades out downhill toward as you approach the Knock. And she had hiked 2 miles, and her experience was, it's a beautiful day, it's a beautiful trail, having a great time. I'm like, and Greg and I were just like, we are done.
I tell you, I think that downhill is quite perilous, and particularly in bad weather, it would be quite perilous, wouldn't it? Because there's some open spots. If you take a wrong turn, you know, you take a wrong step, you could be over the side easily, couldn't you?
Yes. Yeah, that was not the, I mean, up to that point, it was the scariest point on trail that, you know, I don't know, they call it the leap or something like that, up way up at the top there, that big rock. Yes. And I just thought, even as you get it to it, you stop and you look around, where's the trail? Where's this going? We're not going to walk off this knob of rock, are we?
And you told me that when we spoke before that you're in the military, you were a vet. You are a vet, in fact. So you're a veterinarian, I guess. So this is a complete departure. But I was thinking about it this morning. As a vet, you obviously know a lot about animals. Let's hope so anyway. You must have seen plenty of people with dogs out there on the trail. And as I say, this is a bit of a diversion, but did you make any observations about dogs on a long distance hike?
Yeah, I definitely saw dogs on the trail. There was one older dog that I walked with in Pennsylvania. That was probably the only dog I was concerned about, large breed dog, very tired. But the owner was aware, and actually the last day I hiked with him, he said his wife was coming to pick up the dog because he didn't feel like his dog could go any farther, and I fully agreed, and I was glad I didn't have to say anything.
Sure,
the most part, I thought that, you know, the dogs are remarkable. They can walk, you know, as far as we can in a day, so they can do quite well.
Did you observe people treating them properly? I mean, the way in which you know how a dog should be treated, I presume. So did you see any problems with the treatment or anything like that?
You know, I didn't. No, I mean, as far as, I didn't see anybody overpacking their dog. I didn't see. They always carried a bowl so they can give them water every time they stopped. They gave them water and stuff like that. So, I didn't see any issues with dogs other than, of course, the poo on the trail, which just drives me crazy. But
yeah, you know, well,
the dogs themselves, I thought they were treated just fine.
Yeah, well, I saw human poo on the trail, so, you know, good luck with that. Yeah, classy. So, Marla, tell us about the motorhome now. When did the idea to live outside of a brick-and-mortar place come to you both?
That was actually the trail. We had originally planned when Mike retired that we would get, you know, buy a home somewhere near one of our adult children. And then when he decided he was going to do the trail, we were going to buy a motorhome anyway. We thought, well, why don't we just live in it until he's done? And we started living it probably a little bit of, like a year before he started, just to get used to it. And we love it. We love the life. We love the nomadic lifestyle. And so we ended up buying a bigger home, motorhome, than we before the trail started. And we still live in it. And no plans of stopping anytime soon. So
the 36-foot motorhome was the one you eventually settled on. Is that the one you supported him on the trail with?
Yes, yes. And that's why he had to come off trail once a week, because I don't drive it. It's a little big for me. It has air brakes. And so Mike had to come off trail once a week to move it from one campground to the next.
Okay. I didn't get that from our conversation before. So you actually would park up for a week at a time while you would stay in the campground in Marla, and then he would camp to it. How did that work then? What were the logistics of it?
So the original plan was hike Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, come off trail Tuesday night, resupply, get back on trail Wednesday morning, hike Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And Saturdays were the planned 0 days to move the RV. Two reasons. Number one, we thought traffic would be a little lighter on Saturdays. And number two, because I didn't want to compete with, you know, day hikers, weekend hikers on Friday night and Saturday night on trail. So I would avoid those two busier nights in the campgrounds and shelters.
Right. So you left the military in May 21. So you obviously were going to start in 2022. How did you go about preparing for the trip? Or, I mean, I don't know whether a vet has to stay fit being in the military, or were you already fit, or did you have to really fitten yourself up?
No, I feel like I was pretty fit. I did hike quite a bit ahead of time, though. I hiked approximately 1,000 miles before starting the AT. Most of that was on the Ice Age Trail in Wisconsin, because that's where my parents live, that's where my brother lives, and that's where our permanent residence is actually in Wisconsin now, too. So we spend a good bit of our time up there, and it's a nice trail. It's not the AT, but it is a nice trail.
And once you got on trail, did you feel properly prepared, or did it hit you like a ton of bricks like it hit me? Because I hadn't done any training at all, so it was a nightmare for me. Did you find you cope with it quite easily?
The first day I felt like, okay, I can do this, was, I think it was like the third or fourth day on the Ice Age Trail. Rained all day in the mid-40s. And, you know, by the end of it, I was mildly hypothermic and about a 16-mile day. But I did it and felt good about it. And that was the day I actually realized, hey, you know, I actually enjoy hiking in the rain.
You know, that is great preparation for the AT, isn't it? I mean, really, the AT does rain way more than it should do. So the plan, you told us what the plan was originally, and it obviously changes and so on. How did you find him then? Did you have a car attached to the RV or something? How did you get to meet him then, Marla?
So he always planned it out. Before I would drop him off, he would know where he was going to meet me. So I always knew where to meet him when I dropped him off. He would already have it planned. In 3 days, meet me at this trailhead approximately this time. And he was usually pretty accurate.
Well, I'll come back to that in a second, but were you driving the motorhome then, or is there a
we tow our car behind the motorhome. Fine. So I always had the car to go to the trailhead.
I remember when I saw that first, I remember thinking, my God, that car's close up behind that motorhome, but of course it was attached. So you were dropping off. I entirely understand that now. That makes so much more sense then. So did you drop him off at the parking lot at the back end of Spring, or did you do the approach trail, Mike?
I did the approach trail, and we actually registered on January 31st. We did the approach trail the day before, the 31st, and officially started the hike on the 1st. Because, you know, Greg and his wife were there, and Marla, so the four of us walked the approach trail together.
Just the stairway, the Amicalola Falls part. And then we took them back to the top of Amicalola Falls. Greg's wife, Jenny, and I dropped them off on the 1st. And then we went and got a coffee, and then we parked at the parking lot that's just like at mile two. And Jenny and I hiked backwards to get to the beginning and be at the beginning with them.
That's really nice. So you did a couple of the highlights as well. We'll come back to that as well in a minute. So you've already mentioned that you were with somebody else when you started the hike. How long? Who was that, by the way? A guy called Greg, you say?
His name was Greg, trail name Tori. Met him in the Army. He's an Army retiree as well. So,
And how long did you hike with him?
About 500 miles. It was Burke's Garden. It was a rainy day. We were coming down Burke's Garden, and he slipped and fell on a big rock and hurt himself and had to come off trail for injury.
So what was that like? Did that affect your hike much, or did you suddenly realize this is something now different? Because you already had your hiking partner. Your hiking partner was Marla, really, in many ways, wasn't she? She was the one that was with you on the trip in many ways. But you were literally hiking it by yourself by then. That is a different thing, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, it took me a couple days before it really hit in. I mean, he was the one, because, you know, his injury took a zero, just kind of see where he was at, went to urgent care and all that stuff. And when it became apparent he couldn't hike, he took me back to the trailhead right there at the I-77 parking lot. And he was the one that dropped me off and said goodbye. And that was a tough moment, you know, when
I bet.
You know, I'm walking by myself and I'm not going to see Tori anymore. So, but like I said, I like being alone a lot too. So, and it was a beautiful day, and I obviously kept going. And I think it had more of an opportunity to meet other people on the trail. I think a day or two later, I met Click and Clack, and, you know, we leapfrogged a few for a couple of weeks there on the trail too, and got to spend time with them, spend a couple overnights with them too. So,
they came back and stayed in your motorhome.
No, just, you know, camping with them.
Oh, that's right.
In fact, they invited me to one. I wasn't planning on staying somewhere, but they said, you know, we're going to stay at this. What was it? It's just a large dome of rock. And I can't remember the name of it, somewhere in Virginia, south of the Triple Crown. And I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. And it was a gorgeous night, basically laid on this rock and watched the sunset. So it was incredible.
It's the sort of thing you wouldn't normally do in real life, isn't it?
Right, no, I wouldn't.
You have these amazing experiences. It's fantastic. So you drop him off from back and forth and so on. Do you know how many miles you actually clocked up, either driving Marla, but also how about hiking? How far did you actually hike on this trip?
I really don't know how much I hiked, because often I would hike a mile or two every time I dropped him off. Or picked him up. Most of the time picking him up, I was more likely to hike because the weather was warmer in the afternoons. Hiked a lot of the really pretty parts with him, but I never really did count up the miles. And I put a lot of car miles on, because we didn't stay on schedule very well. We had to make our RV reservations out pretty far in advance. And so then if he would get behind hiking, then I could have to hike maybe, or have to drive maybe an hour and a half to get to the trailhead instead of what we had planned on, because we were behind schedule hiking compared to where the RV was. So there, I put a lot of miles on the car. I listened to a lot of Mighty Blue podcasts.
You said you had a story about podcasts as well.
I had one. Yeah. So this was towards the end, but I drove out to A-Ball Bridge Campground the night before he was going to summit Katahdin, which I'm so glad I didn't really have any reason to, but I'm so glad I did and got to see what Katahdin looks like from there. But on the way, I think it
was
awesome.
Awesome.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And they had a beautiful campsite just with this wonderful view. And I'm just so glad I got to see that and experience it with him. But on the way on that drive, I happened to be listening to your podcast where you interviewed Bulldog. And he was talking about how he had hiked with this couple from Michigan, and they were his tramily. And then they had to leave trail for a while to go and do some farming. And so he finished without them and they came back. So I get out of the car and go in to meet Mike at A-Ball Campground at the restaurant. And there he's hiking with the farmers from Michigan that had been Bulldog's trail family. And I was like, I just heard about you. I just listened about you on Mighty Dogs or Mighty Blues podcast. So
that is cool. Awesome. I love that. That is great. Oh dear. So you didn't do Katahdin yourself then, Marla?
I did. Oh, and we have...
How did you do that?
So oh we gosh. Have the trail provides, that's our trail provides story, because there was a person named Bob that just happened to start following Mike's Instagram way back in February. And he said he chose Mike for no other reason than Mike was about his age and he wants to do the Katahdin. He wants to do the AT in a couple of years. And so he picks sure. people close to his age to see how it went. And so I didn't have a parking pass to be able to park in the state park in Baxter.
Baxter. Yeah.
And I had tried to get a parking pass and I wasn't able to, and I just didn't know how I was going to be able to get to hike Katahdin with Mike. And this Bob, who is actually one of the maintainers on the 100-mile wilderness, he contacted Mike and said, when you're in Maine, if you have anything you need, let me know. And so he's the one that actually took Mike cheeseburgers in the 100-mile wilderness. But Mike said to him, my wife is trying to get a parking pass so she can hike Katahdin with me. And exactly the day that we wanted to hike Katahdin, he had a parking pass and he was planning on hiking Katahdin with his daughter. And so I met them at a gas station and they drove me into Baxter State Park, hiked with me to meet Mike, and then all of us summited together. It was just amazing.
I bet it was. So tell us about that day then, Mike. So you started the day not knowing whether Marla was going to be there or not? Or did you know?
We already knew by then, because that was probably halfway through the wilderness when he met me for cheeseburgers, and we had that conversation. And I was just kind of hoping he might know somebody, being a local on trail maintainer, that maybe he knows somebody who has a parking pass for that day or another day. And was, well, I have a, you know, and he seemed legitimately thrilled to be able to, you know, bring Marla in there, and just a such a great person, really.
People are, though. If you didn't notice that when you're out there, how people you encounter, even off the trail in towns and stuff like that, they are so. I don't believe they're necessarily living their lives vicariously through you at all, but they love seeing people succeed and they want to help you in that, in you succeeding, don't they?
Oh yeah. It's much more than just a willingness. It's a desire or yearning to help you. And yeah, trail magic's real.
Yeah. Well, it definitely is. And for most people, you go away as one person, then your partner sees you again, often a full 6 months later. But you saw Mike pretty much all the time, Marla. Were you able to observe changes in him as things went along, or did you notice things more change once it was over?
I think as we went along, probably not at first, but definitely by the last 500 miles, and when he finally did get a tram lead towards the end, just seeing he was just so much more emotional, I guess, just much more likely to, so before the AT, I think I saw him cry twice in our 25-year marriage. And I think on the AT, I saw, and after the AT, saw tears just regularly of things just affecting him emotionally that hadn't before. So that was the biggest change, probably.
Isn't that interesting why that does it? You know, and it does to a lot of people. It does for me as well. I when you told me, I had a bit of a lump in my throat when you told me about it. So I understand the feeling. And it must have been, you know, even though you knew by then that Marla was coming up to the to Katahdin with you, must have been great to get to that sign together. I presume you did get together. It was both there at the same time. So tell us about what it was like to see, first for you, Marla, to tell us what it was like to see Mike having done it. And then what was it like for you, Mike, to have Marla be there with you doing it? So you go first, Marla.
It was amazing. And I wanted him to kind of touch the sign by himself, have that moment, because he had walked every single step of that trail. And so watching him touch the sign, hug the sign, and just have that moment it just meant so much to me. And to be able to witness it and not just see a picture later or hear about it later, but actually just see him have that moment, see him hug his trail family that was there with him, and then, you know, get to be part of sharing it. It was just incredible.
And what was it like to have your wife with you, Mike?
Incredible. And then she pulled out this.
And by the way, don't start crying. Don't start crying.
No. Marla pulled out this sign that said, "Hi, Mom." When we were right up at the top of the sign, and that was just, that was a huge breakdown moment. It took me a while to get my composure to be able to even hold that little thing up to snap a picture of it. But
his mom is his biggest Instagram fan. She watched every single video he put on Instagram and was just, she was hiking vicariously through him. And so after he had hugged the sign and all the things, and he was getting ready to get up on it for his summit picture, I pulled out that "Hi, Mom" sign, and he just loved that so much, and she just loved that so much.
I bet she did. I bet she absolutely broke down over it as well. Now, as we said, you're a 50-year-old guy, Mike. Have you ever wondered how different your hike might have been had you done it, I don't know, just after college or something? Or do you think age in some ways made you appreciate it more?
Absolutely. I don't know. I mean, that was probably, you have a lot of time alone in the woods hiking, a lot of things I think about, and, thinking about what if I would have done this when I was 18, 20 years old, what would my life, look like then? And I can guarantee you it would be radically different. The hiking bug bit me hard on that hike, and it was really hard. It's still hard to stop,
Yeah, I do.
I bet you
think about it every day, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely every day. And I can't say my life would be better if I had hiked it when I was 18 to 20, but it would definitely be radically different. I've had a good life. I'm very happy with my life. I don't know if I would want to change it, but I'd have done a whole lot more hiking in the last 30 years. That's for darn sure.
Yeah. But do you think, doing the way you did it, which is admirable, the way you actually managed to do the logistics of it, because I would think that must have been quite tricky to do. Do you think you missed out on some of the community aspects of the trail, do you feel you had enough of that as well?
No, I do. I think, I intentionally stayed at some hostels along the way to get a flavor for it, and different types of hostels, some of the more quote unquote nicer ones, and some of the more cheaper ones, so to speak. So I got a good flavor of the hike, the hostel style. But yes, I mean, first off, I started so stinking early that I was never part of the bubble and never in really large groups anywhere. So the social aspect, definitely I missed out on some. I can't say I'm heartbroken over that because, I don't do well in crowds anyway, but part of me wishes I would have had a little more of that.
Yeah, it is fascinating meeting some of these youngsters out there. I'm constantly fascinated by them. I really am. And you're actually now a through hiker yourself, aren't you, Marla? Tell us how that came about.
Well, actually, again, I have you to thank for that because I heard your podcast on when you hiked in Scotland, and the idea that a person could hike a trail in England and be able to stay at a bed and breakfast and have a beer at a pub every night. I thought that's a thing. I want to do that. And so I actually emailed you and asked you a little bit about it. And so while Mike was out hiking, I started researching trails in England. And then it happened to coincide with Mike's a huge Denver Broncos NFL football fan, and they played in London this year.
I'm a New York Jets fan, so I feel your pain.
Yeah, but they won in London. They played in London this year, and so I said, if we're going to go to the game in London, let's hike a trail while we're there. And so we actually thru-hiked the Cotswold Way, which is 100 miles. We did it in 9 days. We stayed at a bed and breakfast or an inn every night. We had a beer in a pub almost every night. It was amazing. And we hiked decent miles. We tried really hard to pet the sheep and the cows in the pastures, and we had an amazing time.
Is it a good, I've never seen the Cotswolds. I've been through the Cotswolds. In fact, I went there last year myself, actually. So what was it like? Did you go through some of the beautiful villages down there?
Yes. We started in the north in the, can't remember the name of the limestone, but yeah, everything's made out of this beautiful limestone.
Yes.
And can't say we saw any real castles along the way that I remember, but yeah, just the countrysides, you know, the farmhouses and everything. It's such a beautiful trail.
But literally you planned it by being able to get into a village every night to get to a pub. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
So basically it was a 100-mile pub crawl. Happy days.
Pretty much. Yes.
Nothing wrong with that. So you got to the end, which is wonderful. Do you think you guys are going to stay? You've already said you're going to stay in your motorhome as well. Do you think there are any other long distance hikes that you might be thinking of, Mike, or are you kind of one and done as far as these 2,000 miles are concerned?
Oh no, I definitely want to keep hiking. I think probably something as long as the AT or PCT. You know, that 2,000 plus mile range is probably more than I want to do in one season. So I'm looking more like a 1,000 mile trails, like, you know, Colorado Trail, Arizona Trail, those type of trails. Those are high on my list right now. You know, up through probably the halfway point of the AT, you know, the PCT was next on my list. But, right. You know, the longer I went, it kind of occurred to me, I'm having to put in more miles in a day than I would like. And I'd like to sit here for a bit, but I gotta get to the next, you know, I gotta get to the next place, you know, constantly trying to crush the miles. And that's one part of the hike that I didn't like. And I feel like 1,000 miler, I can do that in 3 or 4 months and just kind of take my time.
And would you support him in the same way, Mar, and travel along with him?
Yeah, I think that I would, because I had just as good of a time, and I don't mind being by myself for, you know, the couple nights at a time, and then picking him up. It really worked well for both of us, and it was a great adventure, and we just both love. Neither one of us are ready to settle down.
Well, I've got to say, you both sound make the whole thing sound very attractive to me. So I really appreciate you getting in touch in the first place and coming on the show. And if you do go on another big hike like this, I'd love to know how that works out as well. So just let us know and stay in touch, okay?
Okay.
For sure.
Appreciate it. Take it easy, okay?
Thank you.
You too. Great talking with you.
And you. Bye.
Bye.
Do you know what? That wouldn't be everybody's way to hike the trail, but it certainly seemed to work well for the two of them, didn't it? And they really shared their journey, even if it was Mike who actually walked the 2,200 miles. Marla was his teammate on the hike and managed to hit a lot of the highlights along the way. We've said so many times in this show how important it is to do your own thing on your hike. They meshed really well and made it work for them, both of them. Great stuff. Now, let's beat Betty McInerney in our class of 23. You may remember a few months ago that I asked a bunch of my Betty questions of hikers who completed the trail last year. Well, these were from Betty McInerney, and she really appreciated the answers. Anyway, here she is, about to head out on her very own AT through hike attempt. Here's Betty. So we're back on with one of the earliest people we interviewed in the Mighty Blue class of 23, and she was also at the Woods Hole weekend. This is Betty McInerney. Hey, Betty, how are you?
I'm well, Steve. How are you?
Well, I'm good, but you sent me a message. Your work is still nuts. You're still working. So when are you actually finishing work?
Probably Friday morning at 10.
Which Friday? Next Friday?
Next Friday.
That's the day you fly out.
Yeah.
Oh, dear me. Oh, dear me. So is it because they've just given you lots of stuff because you're going or what?
No, this business, it's repeat and referral, and, you know, it's not like regular office hours. It's just when something new comes on the market, people surface. It's crazy. And the market.
So what are they going to do the Monday after? What are they going to do then?
Yeah, no, I have an assistant that I brought in, and she's now licensed, and she's picking up where I left off.
Right. So let's talk about your hike then. And are you doing, and it looks like from your message to me that you probably are doing this, you're packing and repacking. I mean, I never packed until the last minute when I went. And you actually fly out on the Friday the 17th and you start on the 18th. So where are you with your pack right now? Do you pretty much know what you're taking?
Yesterday, my assistant and I weighed everything on the food scale. And it, you know, you do it and it's like, oh, 0.4 or something. And you think it's not very much, but I'm sure when I get it all together, it's going to add up. So I have the weights. I haven't packed and repacked yet, but that's probably tonight.
Right, right. So is there any last minute stuff to do, or are you now literally just waiting to go?
I don't think I'll need bug stuff right away, but no. That's one thing I haven't gotten. Right. And the other thing is the thing that you put on your glasses that goes around your neck so that if you fall, they don't go flying.
Yes, good move. I actually lost some glasses once because I didn't have that. And I still don't have those. And I'm silly not having those, because when you lose them, I mean, you're lost, don't you, really? Yeah.
No, yeah. I would have a hard time. But I actually got a replacement pair of glasses just in case, you know, they broke. So I do have a spare pair.
And how are you feeling? You feeling excited?
Yeah. Today, I went from, oh, my God, how am I going to get everything done, to I'm ready to go. I'm mentally ready to go.
Now, you unusually for the Woods Hole weekend, we were lucky enough to meet your husband, Bruce, and he came along, and you said in many ways it sort of allayed his concerns.
Absolutely.
How is he now? But that sounds terrible. How is he now about the hike? That's what I meant, sorry.
No, he's good. He's excited. He's telling people that I'm going. You know, he's looking forward to coming down to Woods Hole and spending a couple of days in a slack pack, and
nice.
Then probably again in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
So, yeah, so all good.
And have you got a spreadsheet and things like that? Are you planning on doing 7 or 8 miles to start? I mean, how are you going to manage this in the first week or so?
I'm going to listen to everybody since I started on your podcast back to day one. And that starts slow. So I'll be 8 to 10 for at least the first 2 or 3 weeks.
Good move. Good move.
And no, I haven't done a spreadsheet. It's just, you know, where I end up, where I end up.
You're absolutely right. You do. And have you made contact with other hikers, or are you just going to go out there and just see who you meet out there?
Yeah, no, there are a couple, but they're starting either before or after me. Right. So, you know, that's the first question that everybody asks, you know, who are you going with? And when you tell them that you're going by yourself, they look at you and their eyes just bug out. But I know that you're going to meet, you know, 30 to 40 people a day. I'm not worried about that.
And I can't remember, you're tenting?
Yes.
You're tenting, and are you going to try the shelters out, or are you rather be in your tent anyway?
No, I'd rather be in my tent. I know where everything is. I won't have mice crawling on me. so no, I'm stick with my tent unless it's raining. Then I might pull the plug and move inside if there's still room.
There are some nights, Betty, where it is so damn horrible out that you just want to be inside with other people in many ways. And, be open to that. I'm sure you are open to that, but be open to that, because it's one of the things that sometimes helps keep you on the trail. You know, some people get so miserable by themselves, but look, I'm sure you're going to have a great time. Is Bruce going down with you, or are you going to fly down by yourself?
No, he'll take me to the airport and we'll say goodbye, and then I'll head down from there.
And how do you get from the airport then?
I haven't connected with him yet, but a couple of people have given me Ron Brown's name, so I've got to reach out to him.
Okay.
And I actually got some good advice the other day. I didn't know whether I needed to put my backpack in a big duffel bag or whatever. And talking with Jim, he said no, he just carried it on, but he checked a small little bag with his knife and that kind of stuff.
Good thinking. You sometimes need to be careful with when I came home with my JetBoil Flash, which is my cooking stove, they actually took the whole stove. They said, because gas has been running through it and we can't have that going on the plane. I said, you want that for your kids, don't you? So they wouldn't let me have it in a plane. Yeah, so I lost it. They just took it away from me, which was a bit of a drag. But look, you know, I'm obviously on your side and I'm rooting for you. Yep. I hope it goes well. But all I ask is you just send me a message every week or so and let me know how you're doing. And any exciting things happen, just let me know.
Okay, sounds good, Steve. Thank you so much for your help.
No worries. Enjoy it, okay?
Yep. Okay, talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye. Blimey, working right up to the end, the day she gets on the plane. Now that is dedication. By the way, in the intro, I mentioned Betty and her husband, Bruce, who were at our Woods Hole retreat. And last week, I told you all that we were selling the complete Woods Hole video series on our hikingradionetwork.com website for $100 off until March the 15th. Well, that was yesterday. But somebody pointed out that many of our listeners don't keep up to date with the shows and tend to listen in a batch of four or five at a time. So we're extending that offer until the end of next month, just in case you missed the announcement last week. With a bit of luck, you'll have caught up by April the 30th and you'll hear all about it. Go to the website and check out what it's about. Thanks as ever to our donors this week. Recurring donors Gail Posey, Sabre Thompson, Todd Withrow, Suzanne Johnson all stepped up again, as well as a new one from Ron Ward. Also, we got a very generous donation from Scott Martin. Thanks one and all. We could not do this without you. Now, taking her first steps on the trail with her mother, Erin Conrad is starting this very morning. If you're listening, on Thursday, March the 16th, of course. Here's Erin. Well, we're actually getting back on for the, it's probably the longest distance between between speaking with people. Our first person we featured in our Mighty Blue class of 23 was Erin Conrad, which we played, I think, December, Erin, I'm not sure. Anyway, how are you now?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. And you're still planning on getting there, I presume. When do you actually leave?
So we fly to Atlanta on the 15th, and then we will take our first steps on the 16th.
Wow. So the 16th is next Thursday, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Right. Well, that's when this is going to come out. That's pretty cool then. So what's been going on? You know, what have you been doing in terms of your planning? Have you developed much or changed much?
I've been doing quite a bit, actually. I've dehydrated most of my food and have my first food box on its way, waiting for me at the Amicalola Falls Lodge. And my pack is fully loaded and waiting for me at the lodge. I've called and confirmed that it was delivered. That was a very anxious 3 days waiting for it to be delivered.
What did you do? Did you just mail it?
Yeah, my mom and I took our packs to a UPS store and sent them that way. And
that's a great idea. Great idea. If you don't mind me asking, how much did it cost?
When we called originally, they told us $60. And I thought, holy cow, that's a good savings. And then before it was all said and done, it was $152. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not so good then. So, your mum still looking forward to going?
Yeah, she's still going to go with me. Yeah.
That's so cool. So cool. So, and I know you mentioned in your email to me that you'd reached out to Grizz, as you Steve Martelli, and you could have just got his spreadsheet from me because I've kept it and he said I can give it out to people. Yeah, I just email it out to people. Helpful, isn't it? Isn't it great?
It was very helpful. Yeah. Yeah. But he was great to talk to. We exchanged quite a few emails he was gracious enough to send me some pictures, and it was good to talk to him. And he encouraged me to keep in touch to, you know, if I have more questions or get more tips. And so good, I'll be looking forward to that.
I met him on my very first day on trail in 2014, and he was wearing his Santa Claus hat then. So he does play Santa Claus. Yeah.
He does a good job on that.
And you've got a going away party this Saturday, apparently.
Yes. Yeah. My husband has decided he was going to throw my mom and I a going away party. And so we've got friends and family coming into town, and we're going to go have a cookout down at my dad's farm and just have a good time and get to see people before we take off.
Is he getting nervous for you?
Yes and no. He's not exactly the most forward, emotional kind of guy, but he's definitely nervous about being in charge of resupply boxes. He's been involved in making sure everything's lined up just right, and he's got a system going so that hopefully it's foolproof. So We'll see.
One thing you learn straight away is nothing is foolproof out there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So just accept that. And so one of the things that you have to be not be careful for, you will work out how to do it, how to plan ahead and so on. It depends how long it takes for your box to get to certain places. And remember, you know, you don't want to turn up to a town to where the post office closes early on a Friday evening and you can't get it till Monday morning. So there's planning to be done, you know, as far as that's concerned as well. You said you dehydrated your food. Is all your food going to be your dehydrated stuff?
Not all of it. I would say probably close to, I'd say a third. You know, my breakfast is mainly oatmeal and like a protein bar. And then lunch is generally ramen or, I've got my peanut butter and there's instant mashed potatoes and the Knorr pasta and rice packets. But the majority of my dehydrated food would be for my dinners of an evening. So,
right. Now, one thing I'm not sure if I asked you before, and I apologize if I already have. Have you and your mother had the conversation that if one of you needs to go home, what will you do?
Yeah, you had asked me that, and we have had that conversation.
Has the answer changed? In that case, has the answer changed then?
No, the answer hasn't changed. You know, if I go, she goes. If she goes, I stay. So that's the That's the short answer.
That works out then, yeah. And it says in this email that you put in your notice at work, and they offered to hold your job till you get back. That must have been some weight off your mind, wouldn't it?
It absolutely was. I want to say maybe back in August, even maybe before then, I had a different boss and I had asked her, is this even an option to keep my job? And she, you know, was going by the book and said, you know, well, no, sorry, it's not how it's going to work. And so then I was like, okay. So that actually started a whole list of anxiety and questions of, you know, am I going to be able to find a job when I get back? And, you know, needing to earn money probably as soon as I get back. And so then I ended up, she moved on to a different company and we got a new boss and she actually had hiked part of the, Camino de Santiago.
Oh, fantastic.
And so she was just on cloud nine for me. She was so excited.
That's lovely.
And she said, you know, I don't want you to go. And so she went to the higher ups and they said, what can you do to make her stay? And so I was elated that they offered to keep my job. So
I bet. So have you actually finished work yet?
Yeah, I did. My last day was February the 24th. And then my husband took me on a nice weekend getaway before all the preparations. And then come Monday morning, I didn't know what to do. I literally showered, got dressed, and I went to work off the clock. Like, I don't know how to live my life except for at work. And so, but.
So you can't do the lady of leisure thing then? You can't just lay back and just watch TV?
Well, I can just lay back and watch TV, but it was knowing I had so much to do because I was so busy with my job. And so until my last day, I had no time to prepare. And so to actually have all these preparations that I've thought about, thinking, oh, yeah, I'll have plenty of time. But then when it came time, my brain just froze. I didn't know where to even start. So I've definitely implemented list making and checking off that list. So
you'll be on the trail in less than a week. From the sound of things, you've obviously thought about it a long time. You prepared a lot. Do you feel prepared? Do you actually feel ready to go now?
I mean, to be honest, I don't even allow myself to think about it a whole lot. I mean, there's a job to be done to be prepared, but the amount of anxiety that I have on a daily basis, it's not really been, I don't think I'm going to think it's real until I actually step foot and then I'm going to probably thinking, what on earth have I done? So
But you, listen, you could, the one thing about that, you know, because the last thing you said, you actually sent me a second email that you'd forgotten. You actually spent some time with your sister-in-law's third grade class, is it at Neosho Heights? And,
yes.
And you talked about the trial, your preparation, and so on. You had about 100 questions. That must have really connected you with the trial and the excitement of other people about what you're doing.
Yeah, it really did. And it also kind of brought up some fear that I didn't realize I had. They had a lot of bear questions. And I really didn't have a fear of bears until after that presentation. I'm like, man, these kids really know what they're talking about. So, but I think for me, the weekend that my husband got me away and we were at a, oh, I don't even know what it was called, but it was some kind of thing. And so we're all kind of waiting around with some strangers, waiting for them to call names. And this woman, she's like, oh, can I come sit with you? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And she was a very neat lady. She was a boxing coach. Never would have guessed that. But So she asked me what I did. And I said, well, I was a home health nurse, but I'm actually unemployed now. And so then she asked me what my future plans were. And to say I'm getting ready to hike the Appalachian Trail, it was very scary to hear those words coming out of my mouth. But at the same time, it gave me so much fuel and excitement for this trip to come on. I'm very excited for it.
I'm sure. Well, look, I tell you what, you know, I'm excited for you and your mother. And so what I'd like you to do is when you get out there, send me a picture of you at Springer for a start. That'd be great.
Yeah.
But then just text me from time to time with updates and let me know, and then we'll get you back on the show and talk about things that happen, you know, good and bad. We'll just talk about it and see. All I say, though, is just enjoy it and relax and feel your way into it. Don't try to take the trail on because you just won't be able to. Just let yourself enjoy and let the trail embrace you, and you'll embrace it right back, I promise you. All right?
Yeah. Yeah,
all
right, that's the plan.
Well, best of luck, okay?
All right. Well, thank you, Steve.
Cheers then. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
These are such exciting days for both Betty and Erin, and a mum, of course. I'm really looking forward to hearing their first impressions of the trail and how it's impacting them both. This trail is nothing like many of us have ever encountered. And it was a total shock to the system for me, I can tell you. But I soon learned that so many others I met out there were feeling just as insecure as I was. It's such a leveller, and it was so good to understand that I wasn't the only klutz out there. Great times. Going forward, we'll now be having more reports from the trail, so we can hear about those early days. A couple of people in our class of 23 have put back their start date for personal reasons, and one, Samantha Galbao, has decided relatively recently that 23 isn't going to be her year, so she won't be starting. It's the same every year, as life interferes with our plans and circumstances change. Still, those who are still going or already out there will be giving you your Appalachian Trail fix in many different ways in the coming months. Just before we get on to Dr. Lynn, we have one more week of her prepared subjects after today, but she's agreed to do another, a bit more spontaneous show in which she'll answer your medical questions. And the way we're going to do it is that you will ask her the question directly by using the microphone icon on our hikingradionetwork.com website. If you look on the page, it's in the bottom right-hand corner. Simply click on it and you'll be invited to start recording. Got 120 seconds to ask your question, so make sure you don't run out of time. Then, if we get enough, we're going to ask them of Lynn after the final Dr. Lynn segment airs. Should be fun. But that's for the future. Today, we've got Lynn back on again with intestinal problems on the trail. So, if you're about to eat, stop for a moment. Here's Lynn. So, this part of the show is obviously Dr. Lynn. Firstly, hey Lynn, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
And we're advising people to listen to this after breakfast. They download it on a Thursday morning. This is about intestinal problems in hikers for 2023. And in your notes to me, you talked about this, an outbreak of norovirus in the Grand Canyon National Park. Tell us about that.
Yeah, when I was doing the updated research for intestinal problems, one of the things I came across was a morbidity and mortality weekly report from September, which talked about an outbreak in between April and June of 2022 that 222 rafters were infected from norovirus. And that's just in like 3 months of rafting time. And who knows how many people more that they didn't get. But it also led me to look into other research that's going on, or other epidemiology that's going on with norovirus. And it seems like norovirus in particular is really taking off lately. One of the things that the researchers are thinking is that because we were so shut down and isolated during the pandemic, now we're getting back to socializing and sharing, including germs. We are now experiencing a resurgence of norovirus in particular.
Wow. Yeah. And you quote a survey of 80 hikers as well. And I, by the way, just to tell you, I've never had it, thankfully. But more than half of them have experienced diarrhea, and 12% were so severe as to be incapacitated. Doesn't that number strike you as incredibly large? And that certainly isn't my experience of being out on the trail anyway.
I don't know about the 12%. I know we hear a lot about the diarrhea and the fact that people have to stay in a shelter or even stay in a hotel for a couple of days and just kind of get rid of it. And I don't know if we really hear so much about the people who just soldier on, because, you know, diarrhea is not something like, hey, you know, I hiked 40 miles today. Yeah. Hey, you know, I dug 6 cat holes today. Nobody's going to tell you that. But they will tell you when they've really had trouble. So it's tough to really tell, because not everybody's going to share.
Yeah. But funny enough, though, I certainly didn't know this. Maybe this is what it was before, but I don't recall, that the diarrhea symptoms can be classified as mild, moderate, and incapacitating. Oh, my gosh. So tell us about the differences between those.
Mild diarrhea is loose stools that doesn't really interfere with your trip. You're still able to get through what you were hoping to accomplish that day. You probably might not feel as good. You might have to stop more often, but you can generally function. Moderate is some interference with your daily trip, but you're still able to get through the day by yourself.
Define interference, Lynn.
probably you'll have to cut short your miles, or... you know, that's probably cut short your miles, or you'll have to use your trowel more often. But yes, You'll still be able to do it on your own. And incapacitating basically means that you cannot function without the help of others, or
That's
you
amazing.
Will need to take a day off, a zero day, to recoup. Yeah.
You know what, Lynn, that's quite, you know, when I read that, I thought, that is so daunting. I know the 80 is very accessible and very leavable if you want to. You know, you can come to a crossing and get off and so on. But if you're stuck 4 or 5 miles and you're incapacitated with diarrhea, that's a kind of scary situation to be in, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It can be, which is one reason why I thought it was very important for us to talk about it, talk about the potential risks, and more importantly, talk about the management so that people don't develop this and then spread it to others.
So, and you talk about symptoms lasting between 2 and 4 days. Is that because you literally pass it out of your body, or because it just has a shelf life isn't the word for it, but it just has a certain life length, and it just disappears from your body? Or do you literally expel it from your body?
Yeah, you expel it from your body, and also your body is killing off some of the virus. But yes, it's you're getting rid of it. You're shedding it.
And so when you go on a trip, and I always like to bring this back to you in many ways, the treatment for mild, you talk about Pepto-Bismol. I can't read all these things. I don't understand some of the words. What do you take yourself when you go?
Pepto-Bismol is my go-to diarrhea medication. It's easy because it's chewable. They also have Imodium. Sure. which is loperamide that you can get over the counter that you have to swallow whole. I honestly don't know if they make chewable Imodium. I would have to take a look at that.
Uh-huh.
But I know that Pepto-Bismol can be taken chewable, so you don't necessarily have to have water for it.
Sure, sure. And you mentioned oral rehydration source. Is that basically just a rehydration regimen, or is that something specific?
Yeah, I used oral rehydration salts as the phrase because that's what was in the Wilderness Medical Society.
Right.
Gatorade, those Noon tablets that we talked about in the dehydration episode, that kind of a thing.
And that will help with it. That will help with mild. So, but for moderate, you said you might need antibiotics. But there's, and you mentioned Cipro. So talk to us about why that's no longer used.
Yeah, people might know of the antibiotic Cipro or ciprofloxacin. That's been around for many years, and is used or has been used for traveler's diarrhea. Oftentimes, people will take a prescription with them if they're going overseas. But it has now come to be a problem because there is now antibiotic resistance to Cipro. Uh-huh. Another problem is that Cipro can cause serious cardiac problems. You can develop a very severe irregular heart rhythm if you take Cipro or another medication similar to that called Levaquin. Now the recommendation is to use azithromycin. Many people know of this as Zithromax or a Z-Pak, which is used a lot for respiratory and sinus infections.
I've got a Z-Pak tent. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
No. And I always laugh when I see Z-Paks. Because for me, it means something entirely different. And I'd rather see a Z-Pak's tent than a Z-Pak's antibiotic.
You think they would have thought about that when they're doing their marketing?
And then there's another one called Rifaximin, which is a new medication that's on the market that works really well, but it is enormously expensive. For instance, I had a patient in my facility who needed it. For 10 days for an intestinal infection, it was over $1,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
But it's very
welcome to Healthcare America.
Yeah,
excellent.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Although in national healthcare, they might not even give it to you because it's so expensive.
Oh, there is that, of course, yeah. There is that, yeah.
Yeah.
So norovirus, you say you should incubate for 24 to 48 hours. Is that literally because of your ability to then pass it on to other people?
So incubation means that if you get the virus, if the virus infects your body, then it takes about 24 to 48 hours before you will actually see symptoms. That's period means.
I think maybe you had to incubate yourself. That's
no,
sort of worse.
No. That's isolate. But no,
isolate.
No. Yeah.
I just read this out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Somebody might have norovirus and then you're in contact with them and you may not show symptoms for 24 to 48 hours. Then you'll get the symptoms and it usually lasts about 2 to 4 days, but you will get, and you know, you'll feel like crap, no pun intended.
Literally, yeah.
But you will get better very quickly.
And you can still shed it though, you say for up to 4 weeks from your stool,
yes,
which is quite remarkable. It stays with you so long, isn't it?
That's what viruses like to do. They like to get people a little bit sick, but not enough to kill them, so that they can just keep replicating and shedding the virus and spreading their lovely goodwill.
Nice, like kids.
Yeah.
So you got the various symptoms. That's for the norovirus itself. How do you diagnose norovirus, or do you just put everything under a dodgy stomach as norovirus? Because I presume it actually isn't, is it?
Not everything is norovirus.
Exactly.
Some can be cryptosporidium, some can be giardia, but norovirus is really the most common. In order to diagnose it specifically, you need to have testing, and most often that's not really, you know, reasonable when you're on the trail.
Right. And you say that in the notes here that hand sanitizers don't kill norovirus.
Yes, that's true.
So what is the best way to do the best, do your best then to keep it away?
Soap and water. Kind of tough to find on the trail, but it's important for people on the trail to know that hand sanitizer does not kill norovirus. I know that when I was hiking, oftentimes, and this is wonderful that people do this, there are bottles of hand sanitizer in the privies that are in the shelters. And it's great, except it doesn't kill norovirus. So I know I carry a small bottle of camp soap. I think it's called Wilderness Wash is the brand that I happen to carry. And it's a, you put a tiny drop on your hand and you soap it up with soap and water and you rinse yourself off. And that's what will effectively kill norovirus.
It's kind of tough to keep clean and pristine on the trail anyway. You say in the notes that not necessary to restrict food, but taking smaller meals to reduce the risk of vomiting. Is that because the virus is still there and whatever you eat is going to come back up again? Or is it just your weakened system that's going to make it come back up again?
A little bit of both. But if you eat a smaller amount, your body will be able to acknowledge it and to try to metabolize it more easily. It's kind of like hiking. If you say, oh, I'm only going to hike a mile, you're more likely to hike a mile. If you say, I'm going to hike 10 miles, you might not make it. You might make 5 miles,
sure.
You won't make 10.
Yeah.
But if you eat a little bit, but you eat more often, then the body will be able to retain it more easily.
Okay. And you've got other lists of intestinal problems. There seem to be way more than I remember being out there. I remember Giardia and norovirus. You've got Cryptosporidium, which I've heard one or two of my guests have in the past. Campylobacter, which may have been said incredibly wrongly. E. coli.
No, you said it right. Yep.
E. coli. E. coli as well.
Yes. E. coli is an intestinal infection.
Shigella. And hepatitis A.
Yes.
And are these things, is norovirus the one that is predominant on the trail, or are these, are we generally getting more and more intestinal problems in 2023 than maybe we were in 2013, say 10 years ago?
I don't think we're getting any more intestinal problems. I think norovirus is rearing its ugly head more than the other ones. And it's very possible.
Well, once again, pardon the expression, rearing its ugly head.
Sorry about that. Walked right into that one.
Oh dear.
And it may also be that we're more attuned to the fact that norovirus is out there. I know a number of years back, Giardia was a big one. Beaver fever, they always call it because it's spread by beavers.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. Okay.
Well, I've got to say, that wasn't the most pleasant conversation. But, you know, it's something that you need to recognize that I expected to get out there and I never, ever did, thankfully. But I heard of certain outbreaks at certain well-known hostels. And once they've got that reputation, it's tough for them to lose that reputation in some ways. So just all you can really say to people is be as careful as you possibly can. Don't share food is probably a good idea, isn't it, when you're out there. And make sure you wash as much as you can.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Lynn. Now everybody can now start having their breakfast. All right. Cheers then.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. She's great, isn't she? I really enjoyed having these sessions of talking with her. She's so knowledgeable about hiking, obviously medical matters as well. And to have her do this has been a real treat for me, and hopefully it has been for you as well. So I hope you've appreciated it. We're not quite finished, as I said, so make sure if you've got questions for Lynn, just go to our website, hikingradionetwork.com, and leave a question through the microphone. Finally today, George Stefanos finishes up with Pennsylvania and plans a quiet restful zero in Delaware Water Gap. As so often happens on the trail, things don't work out quite as he'd hoped. I'll see you next week. Chapter 15, Breakdown. Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania to Greenwood Lake, New York. Wednesday the 27th of July, 1983, mile 1,253.5. Still Delaware Water Gap. I slept more than 8 hours last night. It was the longest period of uninterrupted sleep I'd enjoyed in weeks, but it seemed to do little to restore me. Since my last day off in Waynesboro, Virginia, early this month, I've walked more than 420 miles through the blistering cauldron of a mid-Atlantic heatwave. The nights have been little better than the days. Each day has taken a bit more out of me than the nights have given back. I've been running on reserves for weeks. They're about gone. I woke stupid and disoriented and headed out beneath a blazing mid-morning sun to try to get my errands done as quickly as possible and spend the bulk of the day in my air-conditioned room doing nothing. Yesterday evening, when I stopped at the village post office for my supply package and mail from home, I'd received a postal money order. The little branch office in the village didn't have enough currency on hand to cash it. The clerks advised me to try again this morning. I used up virtually all my remaining money paying for the room and dinner last night. My ready cash had dwindled to less than $2. Cash in the money order was my first item of business this morning. I stopped at the motel office first. The lady who ran the place told me I could pay for tonight when I returned with the money after running my errands. She was very understanding, considering the fact that a motel enjoyed almost total occupancy, but that's just another example of how well I've been treated by the people of Pennsylvania. I will have to return one day and hike this portion of the Appalachian Trail during a month in which temperatures average less than 90. I'm willing to bet I walk away with an impression of the trail in this state that more closely matches my affection for its people. I walked down the road about a mile to the post office. They still didn't have nearly enough cash on hand to redeem my money order, and the letters that never made it to Port Clinton weren't going to make it here either, apparently. This first futile trip set the tone for the remainder of the day. I caught the Stroudsburg bus at 11 o'clock. I'd been informed that a cobbler, which I so desperately needed, was available in that much larger town. Hopefully, their correspondingly larger post office would have enough cash to cover my money order. On a map, Stroudsburg and Delaware Water Gap are just 5 miles apart, but the bus ran one of the more complex routes I'd ever seen. We didn't arrive in downtown Stroudsburg until 11:30. I always make a point when near the front of the bus to tell the driver where I want to get out rather than pull that cord to sound that damn buzzer that must haunt their dreams. My buzzer theory gets proved over and over by the remarkable responses I usually get to this very small act of courtesy. I had a long friendly chat with this driver, and he took the time to give me directions for a shortcut from the bus stop through some alleys to the cobbler's shop, which saved me 10 minutes' walk. I dropped off my boots to have the soles re-glued. The friendly people in the shop told me that the job will be completed in 2 hours. The post office was located a block away. They were able to cash my money order with no problem. The window clerk gave me directions to the nearest laundromat, which was a few more blocks away. I threw my dirty clothes into a couple of washers and started them up, walked down the street to a sub shop and had lunch. Afterwards, I returned to the laundromat, only to discover that both loads had unbalanced during the first spin cycle. This started an incredible chain reaction in timing, which wiped out a large chunk of the lazy day I had planned. I got them going once again and sat down to wait. At 1:30, when my laundry was washed and dried, I returned to the cobbler and picked up my boots. He advised me not to walk on them today, which was fine with me because I had no intention of doing so. I paid the very modest $3 charge and walked back to the bus stop. After waiting for 20 minutes in the hot sun without seeing a bus, I asked a passerby who materialised out of the heat waves about the timing of the next bus to Delaware Water Gap. He told me that they departed once every hour on the half hour, which left me with more than 30 minutes to kill until the next one. I must have missed the previous run by a minute or two. I walked into an air-conditioned bookstore across the street to kill some time and browse the paperbacks for a while. I returned to the bus stop at 2:20 just to be sure that I would not miss the next run. The bus was more than 5 minutes late. When it did arrive, I discovered this interesting little tidbit of a trivia. On one trip each day, the bus runs an alternate route that does not pass through Delaware Water Gap. Guess which trip that was? Right. I now had another hour to kill before the next bus, so I walked into an air-conditioned Dunkin' Donuts and nursed a Coke for 45 minutes. I returned to the bus stop at 3:20 and caught the Delaware Water Gap bus 15 minutes later. It was past 4 o'clock when I finally got back to the motel. That killed any chance I had of mailing my package for home today and getting an early start on the Appalachian Trail in the morning. After paying for my room, I felt the need to lie down for a while. My big rest day in Delaware Water Gap had gone bust. I cranked the air conditioning and collapsed wearily upon the mattress. As the small annoyances of the day ebbed slowly away on a tide of exhaustion, I lay back, thinking of ripples. A pebble thrown into a still pond makes a small splash and is quickly gone, but the ripples linger for a long while, slowly spreading across the smooth surface of the water. Long after the pebble has been forgotten, the ripples are still spreading. A warm, sunny morning in early June, when the relentless, brooding oppression of this tropical summer was yet a faint glimmer on the forward horizon. A short stretch of fine weather between the spring monsoons of the southern Appalachians and a central Appalachian summer of record drought and heat. A slightly used backpacker is adopted by a small homeless puppy, a tiny pebble. A soft velvet night on a high shoulder of a southwest Virginia mountain. The puppy has a new home, and the backpacker lies in his sleeping bag trying to remember. He tries to remember the people and the life he once knew and a place he called home all his life. A place more than 900 miles ahead on the trail. A place about 1,000 years back in his past. He tries to remember it and really cannot. It suddenly becomes important to touch base with this place. Not a constant driving need, but a small, barely noticeable ripple in a vast, still surface. A kaleidoscope of blazing heat and long, wearisome miles. The backpacker has been pushing just a little too hard for too long, and the spirit has slowly seeped out of the adventure. His home is now a little more than 150 trail miles ahead, but he sorely needs the day off he's been forced to take because his shoes are falling apart again. A blazing midsummer afternoon in northeastern Pennsylvania. A washer load becomes unbalanced, a bus is missed, a tired backpacker loses a long overdue afternoon of rest. The upcoming hikes are going to be a little longer. The end of the day pushes for shelter or water just a little wearier. Ripples. I dropped off like a rock and slept for a couple of hours, forced by exhaustion to pass up the free cookout that the local Presbyterian church throws at the hostel for backpackers every Wednesday afternoon in the summer. I woke up and headed over there at 6:30 to sign up for Roger's Appalachian Cottage. Roger is a New York City resident who owns a summer home on Greenwood Lake, a few counties to the northwest of the city. A while back, after discovering that the Appalachian Trail passed near his property, he began to invite thru-hikers to sleep in his guest room and use his cooking facilities. Now he's become such a trail institution that he must limit the number of guests to the amount of spare room he has available. Northbound thru-hikers can sign up for one of the available spaces on a sheet of paper posted on the wall at the Delaware Water Gap Hostel. The cottage is 72 miles away. The long days of hiking under a broiling sun during my recent drive to reach Connecticut had begun to wear on me, so I was planning on taking 4 days to reach the place and arriving on Sunday. I learned that Roger now spends summer Sundays in the city, and the cottage is closed on that day. Saturday was completely booked, so I cannot even try for that night. I'm too anxious to reach Connecticut to spend 5 days hiking those 72 miles, so I guess that I will not be staying there at all. I'm still going to attempt to hike those 72 miles in 3 days, just so I can get a look at the place and meet the man. That would be as satisfying for me as staying there would have been. I think that I can make it. The rest day that I had today seems to have helped my condition. I'm beginning to feel excited about the trail ahead once again, a factor that has been somewhat lacking since Port Clinton. I'm also fired up about the prospect of returning to Connecticut soon and seeing all my friends. That reunion is 163.80 miles away. It's now 12:30 PM, and I've just finished loading my backpack and the box to be mailed home. So much for my possibilities of getting an early start tomorrow. I've just heard the weather report covering the next few days. The sweltering heat and humidity are forecasted to return on Friday with no end in sight. The hell with it. For some reason, I'm still feeling excited and eager to resume my hike tomorrow. I wish I could head out now, but it's just a little dark. I've no idea why I'm feeling this cheerful and upbeat after all that has gone wrong lately, but perhaps it may just be that I've become a drooling imbecile.